Unam Tatraha Pretya Bandhunam Ashrutya Padadevitam Ashrutya Padadevitvam Aha Tan Palako Budva Ahatan Balako Budva Yama Swayam Upagata Yama Swayam Upagata Tatraha Pretta Bandhunam Asutya Padadevitvam Ahatan Balako Budva Yamaswayam Upagata Tatraha Preta Bandhunam Asutya Padadevitam Ahatan Balako Budva Yamaswayam Upagata Follow. Mataji's. Ahatan Balaka Budva Yamasrayam Upagata Tatjantan Yubandhunam Ashutya Padadevitam Ahatan Balako Budva Yamaswayam Upagata Tatra There. Certainly. Preta Bandhunam Of the friends and relatives of the dead king. Ashrutya, hearing. Padadevitam, the loud lamentation. So loud that it could be heard from the planet of Yamaraj. Aha, said. Tan, unto them, the lamenting queens. Balaka, a boy. Budva, becoming. Yama, Yamaraj, the superintendent of death. Swayam, personally. Upagata, after coming. Translation. While the queens were lamenting for the dead body of the king, their loud cries were heard even from the abode of Yamaraj. Assuming the body of a boy, Yamaraj personally approached the relatives of the dead body and advised them as follows. Responsibly, please. While the queens were lamenting for the dead body of the king. Their loud cries were heard, even from the abode of Yamaraj. Assuming the body of a boy, Yamaraj personally approached the relatives of the dead body and advised them as follows. Purport by Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Sometimes a living entity is forced to give up his body and enter another one according to the judgment of Yamaraj. It is difficult, however, for the conditioned soul to enter another body unless the present dead body is annihilated through cremation or some other means. The living being has attachment for the present body and does not want to enter another, and thus, in the interim, he remains a ghost. If a living being who has already left his body has been pious, Yamaraj, just to give him relief, will give him another body. Since the living being in the body of the king had some attachment to his body, he was hovering as a ghost, and therefore Yamaraj, as a special consideration, approached the lamenting relatives to instruct them personally. Yamaraj approached them as a child, because a child is not restricted, but is granted admittance anywhere, even to the palace of a king. Beside this, the child was speaking philosophy. People are very much interested in hearing philosophy when it is spoken by a child. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prastavutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swamini Tanamane Namaste Sarasata Deve Gauravani Pacharane Nirvasesha Sunyavadi Pastitadi Satarane Om Aganatra Mandasya Ganandana Salakaya Tokshun Militan Nena Tasmai Sigarave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Bhistam Stapitam Vena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadadayam Dharati Swapadandikam Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sivasati Gaur Bhaktarinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Mukham Karoti Vachalam Bangam Langayate Kirim Yakripatamaham Bande Sigurundina Taranam. While the kings were lamenting for the dead body of the king, their loud cries were heard even from the abode of Yamaraj. Assuming the body of a boy, Yamaraj personally approached the relatives of the dead body and advised them as follows. So, what comes to my mind, first of all, is how we're all attracted by hearing words of philosophy from a young child, a young person. This seems so amazing. They really, you know, put us in our place sometimes, don't they? So, there are such personalities in our midst at this present moment that we have experienced such a phenomena. And haven't all of you experienced this before here? There's a young lady sitting right up front here, and she has, in the past, amazed me at her philosophical questions, and now she's amazing me at her attentiveness and her eagerness to hear, so much so that she's sitting up at the very front. Aren't you all intrigued by this also? So, this is a special phenomena that we can all take lessons from. Like, who are we? You know, we are elder. We've been practicing devotional service for many more years. We have maybe even read through the Srimad Bhagavatam many times. But some of us still have a tendency to fall asleep in Srimad Bhagavatam. And I'm speaking for myself. Many of you probably have witnessed this. And I am the first to admit to this. And so who should be paying their obeisances to who? Sometimes I'm quite embarrassed when I'm, you know, there's a young advanced person coming up to pay respects to me. I feel like paying respects to them. So this type of consciousness is very favorable for advancement in spiritual life. For if for any reason one becomes proud, that means that person has a problem. Because that personality is lacking in their realization of who they actually are. We're thinking, oh, I am senior. I am elder. I know more shlokas. I've been around longer than other people, so therefore I deserve so much respect. But the fact of the matter is that if you're thinking like that, then you don't deserve respect. You deserve respect because you're older and you've been around a lot longer. That's part of Vedic culture. So people are going to, naturally, that people that have culture are going to respect you and they're going to give preference to you. But in actuality, the fact of the matter may be that you're on a much lower level of spiritual advancement from those that are paying respects to you. So there's a pastime with Srila Prabhupada that I have many, many times said in the past. But maybe some of you haven't heard it. Because Mayapur is such a place where there's a constant flux of devotees coming and going. So Srila Prabhupada was with his earlier disciples before my time here in India. And they were complaining. Srila Prabhupada, the Indian people, they don't know how to wait in line. They don't know how to drive properly. They don't know how to use a trash can. We could probably brainstorm, and I could, get up there at the chalkboard and probably make a full chalkboard full of points of how we could find fault with this country and the inhabitants of this country. And Srila Prabhupada, yes, he acknowledged, yes, what you're saying is true. The Indian people, they're running away from Krishna. And he says, they're running away from Krishna, but they're this far from Krishna. And you're running towards Krishna, and you are this far from Krishna. So all you have to do is convince them to turn around, and they are much closer to Krishna than you are. So this instance, shed some light on what's actually happening here. That, you know, everything's not according to what it seems to be. That someone may appear to be, you know, so far away from Krishna, and in your vision, you're so close to Krishna, but it's actually the opposite. And it goes to show how, if we want to make progress in spiritual life, that we should have respect for others, even though they're showing symptoms that may foster disrespect. So here, we're hearing from Hiranyakashipu, of all people. And his words are written down in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Was this some kind of mistake by Srila Vyasadeva? Was there some slip-up by Ganesh when he was writing down what he was listening to? No. For in Niti Shastra, it is described that one can accept gold from a filthy place. One can take instructions if they are relevant, from an unqualified person. And one can accept a well-qualified and chaste wife from an obscure family. That permission is given. So here, Hiranyakashipu, although playing the part of the most contaminated living entity within the universe, because his desire is to enjoy his body and his desires to overlord the material energy are the greatest of anyone else. He has an intense desire to do these things. But he's pulling his emotions under control, and he is speaking philosophy to the queens of his dead brother, for they are in a lamenting condition. So in the purport, Srila Prabhupada gives us some light on this situation. And it's like sometimes a living entity is forced to give up his present body. Like before, you know, the regular time is generally there to give up the body, which is at old age. So this is called a, you know, death at a younger age. And at this time, if the body is not cremated or disposed of very quickly, it can cause some problems to the soul that was inhabiting that body. For these living entities are very, very attached to their bodies, and they don't want to leave them behind. And if the living entity is not so impious, in other words, an impious living entity who has left the body has actually been dragged out of their bodies by the Yamadutas and taken away quite quickly. And so, therefore, they don't really have the liberty to hang around their dead body for very long. But if a living entity hasn't been so sinful to be dragged away by the Yamadutas, then still he may find himself in a very lamentable situation as a ghost. And so therefore, out of compassion for such living entities, it is recommended that when the soul leaves the body, that we dispose of it as quickly as possible. In other words, if a living entity dies in the day, then before sunset, the body should be cremated. And if the living entity leaves the body at night, before sunrise, it should be cremated. So, here in this purport, what jumps out to me is Srila Prabhupada's compassion. And how he's actually compassionate to us. Because, you know, those of us that knew Srila Prabhupada might be aware of our conditions and the conditions of the devotees around us when Srila Prabhupada was amongst us, giving us instruction. Now, there's a saying that if you've learned something wrong, it will take some time to unlearn what you have learned wrong before you can learn it right. Just like if you've learned how to play mridanga wrong, it will take longer for you to learn how to play mridanga properly than for someone who has just started out with a fresh, clean slate and they have a proper teacher. So those of us in the Western world, first of all, we have to unlearn what we have learned in our youth. And this is the importance of what is called sangskaras, impressions. Now, I was born in the West, and in the very prestigious and exalted country called America. Now, this attachment for the land of birth is a very lamentable situation, so all of you should feel sorry for me. It's described that if one thinks of this body, yasyatma buddhi kunupe tudai tuki, which is made of three elements, three very obnoxious elements, bile, mucus, and air. Okay? At least in relationship to the body, you know, we know that these three elements, they take on a very obnoxious form. Swadi kalatradisha bhoma ijadi. That if, you know, you're thinking that, yes, this is my wife, and this is my children, and these are my relatives, but everyone else, you know, they don't fit into my equation of being very important to me. If you think like that, then, and also that, you think that your land where you are born is very worshipable. Yatirta Buddhi Salade Nakarishis. And if you go to some holy place of pilgrimage, because, oh, you've heard that if you go there, you get to go to the heavenly planets. You get some material benefit. And you don't take advantage of the saintly people that are giving actual spiritual instructions. Save a goat. You're no better than a cow or an ass. You're no better than an animal. So, all of you can feel very sorry for me now, because I'm no better than a... And so therefore, I have to undergo this endeavor of unlearning what I learned in my youth. And I came to Krishna consciousness at the age of 19. Now, by the age of 19, there's quite a bit of time that has passed, and a lot of impressions are there in the mind. And so therefore, I have a long ways to go before I can take up where someone is starting that doesn't have these impressions. So this gives special importance to raising our children in Krishna consciousness and offering to them the best facilities that we can possibly offer within our means, so that our children can go through their years, which are under our supervision, in a way so that they learn good sangskaras and they do not learn bad sangskaras. So Yamaraj, he's showing in this pastime of his, someone who has very good sangskaras, he will be speaking philosophy as a very young person. And this is the sign of a personality that has good sangskaras. Another personality that exhibited these symptoms was Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. At the age of 7, he knew the whole Bhagavad Gita by heart, and he could give a purport to every sloka also. So Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur also fits into this category of a very attractive personality in his youth. Also, Srila Prabhupada, in his youth, when he was very young, he would imitate the puja at the neighboring temple, and also his father was doing puja, and he was given deities at a very young age, and so on and so forth. This is an example of some sangskaras. He said, I have never known what it means, this illicit sex, this gambling, and this intoxication, and this meat eating. I've never experienced this in my life. So this is a personality that has taken up from his previous life, or else they have come directly from the spiritual world. One of the two. So who knows Who amongst us, where are we from? You know, are we from, are some of us from, are some of you from the heavenly planets? Good chance. Are some of us, you from Vaikuntha Loka or Goloka Vrindavan, and you've been specifically sent here by the Personality of Godhead to enlighten us and to set an example for us so that we can learn? There's a possibility. It has happened before. It can happen again. Might happen again, it will happen again. Because Krishna says, Puritranaya sadunam vanashtaya tuduskitam dharma sangstapanartaya sambhavami yuge yuge. That in order, first of all, his main purpose of why he comes is to deliver the pious. And it's kind of like a secondary thing that he annihilates the miscreants. He does this with his Vasudev feature. But he gives pleasure to the devotees in his Krishna feature in Goloka Vrindavan. Pritranaya sadhanam vanasaya tuduskitam dharma sangstapanar Taya sambhavami yuge yuge. And he does this over and over and over again. It's not that he's done it and he won't do it again. He says he does it repeatedly. So we can say, you know, wow, who knows who's sitting right next to you? They may be a very, very exalted personality, but you do not know it. So it behooves us to be respectful to every single living entity that we may come in contact with, because as Srila Prabhupada, in the previous instance of his pastime here about the Indian people, they're more exalted than you Westerners. They're closer to Krishna than you are, even though they're throwing the garbage on the street and they're butting in line and, you know, they're crowding up next to you on the train seat and maybe even pushing you off the train seat eventually. They're pretty good at that, aren't they? So, we have to be careful of being respectful. Also, like you're in the temple room here in Mayapur and, you know, pushing and shoving and very loud talk and so on and so forth. We don't know who these people are. And there's one story that Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said. There was once a little boy, and he had a lot of desires. He wanted a lot of things. And he misbehaved a lot because his parents could not always cater to his desires. So he wanted to possess the sun, the moon, and the stars in the sky. And no matter what his parents said to him, he wouldn't take it that they didn't have the power to give him these things. So finally, he just said, bring me to a high building, and then I will be able to get in my possession, you know, the stars and the moon, like this. So they brought him up to a high, very tall building, as the tallest building they had at that time, wherever they were living. And still, the child could not get into his possession for his pleasure the stars in the sky and the moon in the sky. So he put his face up in the sky with utter disgust, and he spit. Now, what happened? The spit came down and hit him in his own face. So, if we, the purport, if we disrespect other living entities, and it can be quite illusory who may be that other living entity, what position they have in spiritual life. We really, really don't know. Their spiritual life may not have awakened yet. Just like in the Bhagavad Gita, Nihabrikama Nasosti Patabayo Navivdite Swapamapisa Dharma Shatra Trayate Mahatobayat. That basically we take up where we left off in our previous life. But we may not take up where we left off in our previous life right away. Just like, you know, many of us. We didn't come to Krishna consciousness until much later. So therefore, you know, we've, you know, may have exhibited some symptoms of worldliness previous to coming to Krishna consciousness. I know I certainly did, and I've also exhibited symptoms of worldliness after coming to Krishna consciousness. I actually experience this on a daily basis, more like an hourly basis, or like a minute-by-minute basis, more like a second-by-second basis. So, we have to be careful. And disrespecting others will simply come back to us and create harm to our own selves. So this is where self-control comes into being. And on the different stages of advancement in spiritual life as delineated by Rupa Goswami, there's Adaushada. Let's see, you know, I took a note here. I think I'll take some liberty to look at my notes because my memory of slokas, remembering slokas, isn't so great. So, Adau Shada Tata Sadhu Sangota Bhajanakriya Tato Narta Nivritti Shat Tato Nishta Ruchis Tata Asa Saktis Tato Bhavas Tata Premab Yudarik Chati Sadakam Ayam Premna Padur Bhave Bhavet Krama. That, so in the beginning we may have some faith, and then that's adult. And that's about all we have. We don't have much more qualification than that. So we come to Krishna consciousness. So this adult. So there's some slokas in the Bhagavad Gita, ado means beginning, that also have this word ado in it. Tasmat tvam indiyani ado, niyamya badatarshava, patmanam prajihiyenam jnanavigasya nashanam. Therefore, in the very beginning, curb this great symbol of sin lust by regulating the senses, and slay this destroyer of knowledge and self-realization. So, wow, you've just come to Krishna consciousness and you're 19 years old, and you hear what you thought was your greatest friend, lust, is actually your worst enemy. Imagine that. For if you're growing up in the Western world, I mean, lust, that's what life is all about. That's the purpose of life, to enjoy in relationship to your senses. But then we hear, nope, it is your worst enemy. Bandhu atmatmanas tasya yenat mai batmanaditaha anatmanas tachatudve varte tat mai bhashat chubat. For one who has conquered the mind is the best of friends. But for one who has failed to do so, his very mind will be the greatest enemy. So, okay. So now I learn, you know, after embracing lust for so many years, that it's my worst enemy. So how do I deal with this lust? There's another shloka with the word ado. Actually, maybe not ado, but tasmat, therefore. Tasmat agyana sambhutam vichitam jnana sanatmana chitvenang sangsayang yogam atishtatishta bharata. Therefore, the doubts that have arisen in your heart out of ignorance should be slashed by the weapon of knowledge. Armed with yoga, O Bharata, stand and fight. So, I don't know about all of you, but I know I have like a battle of Kurukshetra going on in my consciousness. You know, sense gratification, regulation, chanting my rounds, pulling the mind away from sense gratification, then back to sense gratification, you know, contemplating the objects of the senses, then no, that's not right. I've heard so many times, you know, we shouldn't do this, pulling it back. And then, you know, grabbing onto my japa and, you know, getting up early, going to Mangalarti, praying to the deities, serving the Vaishnavas. Then that very attractive object of the senses comes before my vision, and again, going back to it. And again, pulling the mind back and focusing on spiritual life and serving the Vaishnavas and reading Srimad Bhagavatam. And this is the battle of Kurukshetra within my mind. I don't know about your minds. So eventually we get a handle on things, if we keep trying. And it's actually, there's a shloka in the fifth chapter of the Gita. I don't remember the Sanskrit as usual, and I didn't write in my notes. That if one is free from anger and all material desires, and if he's constantly endeavoring for perfection, then perfection is guaranteed within the very near future. So, first of all, overcome vitaraga bhayakrodha, being freed from attachment, fear, and anger, being fully absorbed in me, taking refuge in me. Many past people in the past became purified by knowledge of me, and thus they all attained transcendental love for me. First of all, before it's a lot of people that have attained perfection, it's the people that have attained perfection that have become freed from attachment, fear, and anger. Those people, and the ones that are endeavoring sincerely and steadily, they've many of them have attained success. So until we come to that platform, we are in danger. We are what's called treading on very thin ice. Now, I grew up in a place what I like to now call Poppy Desh, which is the place of the land of sin, America. And I grew up in quite a cold place in the mountains of Colorado. And we like to go ice skating in the wintertime. And in order to get the ice skating rink, you had to go all the way to a bridge and then cross a big parking lot. And then you could get to the place where you take off your shoes and you put on your ice skates. And then you could be on your merry way gliding across the frozen ice. But we didn't like to do that. We like to go directly across the frozen lake and that's dangerous because the southern part of the lake was on the place where we would cross and the northern part of the lake was where it was safe to ice skate. So one time I was crossing across the shortcut and crack. I didn't fall in, obviously, because I probably wouldn't be around to speak about it. But it put fear into my heart. So then I decided from then on, I think I should, walk and get to my the ice skating place in a and it might take a little bit longer, but I may be around to experience ice skating again. Now time has passed, and I could care less about ice skating. Although I was a very good ice skater, we had competition every year, and I was extremely competitive. And I won, I think it was 7 blue ribbons and 1 white ribbon. And I very proudly pinned them on my jacket. But lo and behold, there was a photograph in the small town newspaper where I grew up. And it took a picture of someone else who won less ribbons than I did. So this was greatly disturbing to me, for I was superior to that personality, that they won less ribbons than me. So we have these illusions that what is a lesser person and what is a greater person. And now I look back at that and I go, boy, did I have bad samskaras. What is an exalted personality? Someone who's very good at sports or someone who's very pure in heart? It's called misguided understanding. So this type of understandings, they are rectified by reading the Srimad Bhagavatam and hearing from the great souls and associating with advanced devotees. And things from our past get put in proper perspective. And so then we can also, the goal of life is put in proper perspective. And if we grab on to these things that give us proper vision and proper desires, then we all will make progress in spiritual life. And as time progresses, gradually the anarthas will diminish, and the determination to progress in spiritual life will increase automatically. So, I've gone a little bit over time here. Sorry about that. Anyone who wants to go home can. You have my permission, even though you don't need it. Although I would have been very offended if you left when I didn't give you permission because of my conditioning. So, where's that young lady that was up here? I was hoping that we were going to hear some philosophy from her, but she has disappeared. She had to go to school. I should have ended class earlier so we could have heard some philosophy from a young person that's very attractive. It would have woken some people up that are sleeping right now. So, who has a question? Yes, Prabhu.
In the demigods prayed to Lord Vishnu for protection, and then Varaha came and killed Hiranyaka. And then we also saw that Prahlad Maharaj, later on with Hiranyakasipu, we see pictures of him praying, and then Krishna, Lord Nrsingadev, saves him. Yesterday, on the outskirts of Gaur-Nagara, a man robbed a devotee at gunpoint. They came on a motorcycle and put a gun to the head of somebody and then demanded all their valuables. And there'll probably be a lot more of that kind of thing happening as Kali Yuga goes on. So how are devotees able to protect themselves from things like that? Should we just pray to Lord Nrsingadev or take some other kind of action?
There's the sloka. You know, I forget the Sanskrit as usual. But if one willingly undergoes the sufferings that one is forced to undergo within this material world, but while undergoing those sufferings, continues to be grateful and respectful and with on reference toward the Supreme Personality of Godhead, thinking that, yes, something bad has happened to me, I deserved it, I actually deserve so much more. But Krishna is so fortunate, I'm so fortunate that Krishna has only rewarded some token punishment. If one can somehow or other grasp onto this state of consciousness, and then the spiritual world becomes your rightful claim. So I don't know the personality that was robbed at gunpoint yesterday outside of Gaur-Nagar, but it was an opportunity for that person to practice this sloka. And if that personality did not practice that sloka at that time, that opportunity is there to practice the lesson of the sloka now. And similarly, all of us will get the opportunity to practice this sloka, guaranteed. I mean, all of us are getting old. All of us are going to get diseased. All of us are going to suffer in so many different ways. Can we remember this sloka? And if we do, the spiritual world becomes our rightful claim. So it's an opportunity for all of us, if we get robbed at gunpoint, to be grateful to Krishna and make progress in spiritual life. Another question? Yes?
You were talking about ghosts.
Yes.
Do devotees who commit suicide have to come back as ghosts?
Well, it did happen to Tota Haridas. I guess it can. Krishna desires to teach his devotee a lesson. You can put him in a ghost body temporarily. It's not beyond the realm of possibility. Maharaj Bharat took the body of a deer. Tota Haridas got the body of a ghost temporarily. So who are we to think that we can just simply, I have chanted Hare Krishna, I can transgress, the orders, the instructions of the acharyas and my spiritual master, and think, well, it'll be different for me. I can commit suicide, and I won't become a ghost. It's a risk. Risky business. Better not engage in these types of risks. You're testing Krishna when you do that. And you may end up losing, failing the test, because Krishna desires to teach you a good lesson. Okay, Hare Krishna, yes. Can you please pass the mic? I saw one of my godbrothers, Sikhi Mahiti, he had an hearing aid. I think I'm about ready to get one of those too. Okay.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu. Firstly, the verse you mentioned was 10:14:8. Tatenu kampam susamikshamano. But the question I have for you, please, Prabhu, is something you mentioned at the beginning of the class that raised a doubt in my mind, and that is, when the living entity leaves his body, does he become a ghost after the interview with the Yamadutas and Yamaraj, or before going to be taken by Yamaraj? Could you clear this up, please, Prabhu?
Well, I'm not completely aware of all the intricacies of, what happens when a living entity leaves his body. It's quite possible. Sometimes it could be one way and sometimes it could be another. There's a lot of variety in this material world, after all. But the one instance that I know of when the Yamadutas, they attempted to take the soul out of the body, but they were unsuccessful, was by Adamiel. Now, I haven't heard from the Shastra. I have not heard from a sadhu. And I have not heard from my guru the intricacies of this question. So how can I answer that question without cheating you? Has anyone else in this great exalted assembly of Vaishnavas heard the answer to this question? And so that you can shed some light on this subject matter and enlighten all of us? I'm willing to share the mic with you. Any hands? Yes, Mr. Bhagavan, he has an answer to this question. Just a minute.
I had the understanding that it was before. This prophet says something about being a ghost is waiting. It's sort of an interim period. And I think it was mentioned also here, you mentioned the word interim between ghost and people die in an unexpected time, then they spend some time as a ghost, and that seems before the court of Yamaraj.
I think I could engage in some debate with you on this, but I don't think I'll exercise that right now, because it could also be, well, okay, I won't go back on my word. I almost did that. Okay, anyone else? Any questions? Any comments? Yes, Mahatma Prabhu. Please give Mahatma the mic. Okay.
I just want to reiterate the same understanding that, as far as I understand, if one commits suicide before their destined time to leave this world, their next body's not ready. So they are waiting in a ghost body for that time when their next body is ready, and then generally you see Yamaraj to get your next body. So that's, I can't quote that, because sometimes we understand something which is an assumption based on things we've read that don't exactly say that. But that's what we've understood. At least Prabhupada said that much, that the body's waiting. He didn't. And generally, before you, Yamaraj prepares you for your next body, that idea that you're ready to take anybody as you're going through these different kinds of suffering. So that's an assumption I'm making.
Sometimes, though, one takes a ghost body when it's not suicide. Like sometimes a very violent death. It's described that you can take a ghost body from very violent. So these things, I mean, it's good to know the truth about them. It's nice to. But I think there's some more pertinent, more important understandings that we should know to make real progress in spiritual life. And if we don't really know the conclusive answer to this type of a question, I don't think it's really going to hurt us that much. That's my opinion. I don't know what everyone else thinks. Anyone else have a question or a comment? Sorry to leave you with some, what's the right answer and what's the wrong answer. But sometimes you have to kind of put things on the shelf, and gradually in due course of time you get a conclusive understanding on something in due course of time. Okay? Srila Prabhupada ki. Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Hiranyakashipu ki. Hare Krishna.